13th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Here.
Mayor Protem Guthrie is absent. And Mayor Ferrara?
Here. We expect the Mayor Protem in about 20 minutes or so. He was detained. Item 3 is our flag salute, and we're very pleased to have the Kiwanis Club of Arroyo Grande here to lead us in the flag salute. And if you would, please remain standing. Dr. Paul Jones was supposed to be here for our invocation tonight, but he couldn't make it, but we're fortunate to have a backup, and that is Jared Sharon, who will do our invocation after the pledge.
Okay, everyone, please face the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Thank you, Jared, for pitch hitting. We really appreciate that. And we get to hear about Kiwanis.
Yes, we get to hear about Kiwanis.
I know there's a lot of things going on, so.
There's a lot going on. Arroyo Grande Kiwanis, Valley Kiwanis Club was founded in July of 1973, so we've been around for a while. Our motto is changing the world, one child and one community at a time. And we thank you for presenting us with a sponsorship award on April 24th at the Volunteer Appreciation Dinner. It was much appreciated by us. Our projects that are upcoming are the Strawberry Festival, Harvest, we work on the Harvest Parade and Festival every year. We take collections from Albertsons for the Children's Resource Network. 7 days a week, we have members collecting and donating those clothes and school supplies. International Kiwanis has been working on Project Eliminate. It's a project that strives to immunize women of childbearing years so that their children are not born with tetanus. Children born with tetanus die a very painful death. And we're almost ready. By the time this is over, hopefully, we will have eliminated tetanus over much of the globe. We're proud of that. We also maintain Kiwanis Park in the village. We do highway cleanup. And we sponsor a performance of the melodrama every Christmas. The melodrama, thank them very much, does a Christmas performance, and we bring seniors who are homebound or who are in care facilities from our area. They really enjoy it, and so do we. We also help out the Christian Women's Food Bank collecting baby food. We're participants in Arroyo Grande in Bloom, and we're about to give scholarships to two young women, seniors, from Arroyo Grande High School, and one young woman from Lopez High School. So that'll be coming up in the next week or so. Arroyo Grande Valley Kiwanis meets on Thursday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. at the Quarter Deck Restaurant, where we have a lively breakfast meeting, and we have a program featuring a guest speaker from our community. And we'd like to invite everyone and let you know you're welcome. You'll be warmly greeted. And I believe our speaker for this Thursday is here, Tim Brown. So that'll be interesting, and I'm certainly looking forward to it. That's about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. We appreciate all the good work Kiwanis does for the community. Okay, moving on to item 5, agenda review. 5A is closed session announcements. We have none this evening. 5B, move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. I do want to make another announcement under agenda review for the benefit of those of you who are here and also those who may be watching at home. There's been a lot of discussion, I know, throughout the community about the Bridge Street Rehabilitation Project that was supposed to be on this evening's agenda. We postponed that, if I understand correctly, Steve, for probably about a month. We're doing some additional staff work. Is that correct?
Yes. Actually, it was last scheduled for the next meeting, so we might want to bring it up again next time. We're probably holding off at least a couple months. And it's good news. We've got additional information that'll be really helpful in decisions, so I think everybody will appreciate the additional information. Probably be a couple months delay.
As a lot of you know, the dilemma has been how we can take care of the safety needs of that particular bridge, still maintain its historic value, and also get the project paid for. And that's been the balancing act that we've had to go through with Caltrans and the other funding agencies. And so what staff is doing is additional homework to see if there are other cities or other communities that have had the same situation develop. And so far, we're having a favorable outcome. So we're hoping that we can kind of wrap all of this up and at least make almost everyone happy. So we're still working on it. Okay, moving into item six, special presentations. We do have two this evening. And the first is 6A. It's an honorary proclamation declaring May 18 through 24 as National Public Works Week. And we are privileged to have our Public Works Director, Jeff English, is here. And Jeff, if you would be so kind to meet me at the podium. And an understanding of the importance of the work they perform. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Tony Ferrara, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, on behalf of the City Council, do hereby proclaim the week of May 19 through May 25 as National Public Works Week, and we call upon all our citizens to acquaint themselves with the issues involved in providing our community with adequate infrastructure, facilities, and services, and to pay tribute to our public works professionals and recognize the substantial contribution they have made to our national health and welfare. Jeff, it's always a pleasure to present this to you.
Thank you very much.
And we would invite you to say a few words, if you would.
Certainly, be happy to. And on behalf of the Public Works Department, I want to thank the council and the mayor for this recognition. May 19th through 25th is National Public Works Week, and we will be combining efforts with other public works departments throughout the county next Thursday night at the San Luis Obispo County Farmers Market to show off some of the equipment and some of the projects that we've completed this last year. And I really would be remiss if I didn't recognize, you said in the proclamation, dedicated personnel. And we have a crew of dedicated personnel here in Arroyo Grande who help maintain our roads, our parks, our water infrastructure, our sewer system, our stormwater system, and design our projects as well. So, wonderful crew, and I appreciate the support that you've given the Public Works Department over the years, and thank you for this recognition. Appreciate that.
I just want to say a note about our Public Works Department, and Jeff in particular. I want to commend you for your leadership. In the past, many of our projects that are typically contracted out have, you know, kind of put a strain on our budget. And one of kind of the belt tightening strategies that we put in place is that some of that work has now been taken in-house. And it's the same projects are now being done by our own staff. And we really appreciate it. They're getting done just as efficiently and for a lot less money. So we really appreciate the extra work that that the staff is putting in. So thanks very much. Okay, we also have a second special presentation, and this is one that we postponed from the last meeting, but we're very happy to have our presenters here from the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County, and they're going to give us a presentation on the Pismo Preserve. So welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. My name is Chris Clark. I live at 562 Crown Hill, just up the street, and I'm pleased to be here. I'm with Stacy Smith, who is the Land Conservancy project manager from the organization, and we're very excited to talk to you about this project that we think is very special for the South County. The Land Conservancy has been in operation for a long time, done many good projects. This is their motto, if you will, their credo, to conserve through land protection and planning, to care for the land, and to connect with people, to outreach and give opportunities for public involvement and participation in this important process. We created a strategic plan for the next 5 years, and we strive to set aside up to 15,000, maybe more, acres of land, safeguard our current holdings, doing restoration projects, et cetera, implement three major restoration projects, and create two new public parks, and increase education of this important activity. One of these parks is the one we want to talk about tonight, the Pismo Preserve. You're all familiar with the property because you drive by it if you're on the freeway back and forth to San Luis Obispo. I'm always struck by the fact that 101 leaves Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, and that's the last time you see the ocean until you get through the pass at Avila Beach. And there, for just a minute or so, you get to see the Pacific Ocean. So it's a pretty dramatic opportunity. And there, on the shoulder of the hills, lies this 890-acre parcel, which had been looked at for many years as a possibility for development, et cetera. But we were very fortunate to get the opportunity to try to preserve this. And so we're going to various organizations and municipalities to talk about it. And that's our purpose tonight, is to introduce this project. Limited natural resources, so again, a big piece of open space. There's the property. Again, we're so familiar with it. I actually grew up on a house in Grover Beach that looked out over that. I just assumed it always looked like that, and now I'm still hoping that it will. Live oak woodland, rangeland, all kinds of animals, wonderful place. Dramatic views. If you've ever been up the road to Gull, this, the one right in the middle, actually, we have decided to acquire that as well. So that was an outholding. And then there's a little strip that will remain with the landowner, the current landowner. But that's a parcel. It goes, that little star up there is Pismo City Hall, McClintock's restaurant, if you will. And so that's the northern extent of it. And then, as you can see, it wraps around the developed part of Pismo Heights and then over to Price Canyon Road. Here's what we're doing, and part of we're taking advantage of you and your public access so that we can talk to the people of the South County about our fundraising efforts. Obviously, that's going to be a part of it. We need $12 million for this project. We're anticipating approval from the California State Coastal Conservancy next week for $4 million, Wildlife Conservation Board as well, another $4 million. San Luis Obispo County Parks Commission has recommended $1.1 million at least to the Board of Supervisors, and they hear that tomorrow, so we'll find out from that. Another $1.2 million is going to be looked for from other municipalities and other agencies and stuff. I didn't type that in there. But and then we're also looking for help from private businesses, private donors. We've received quite a bit of pledges for this, including between about 35 and 40,000 from Arroyo Grande residents. So those people here are very excited about it. And I think everyone in the South County recognizes this is more than a Pismo Beach project, but really a South County project. So we're looking to get this money gap closed up. We want to get it wrapped up by July 1st with a closing in August. So it's a fairly aggressive schedule, but we have an opportunity to preserve this. Again, it's a magnificent property. We're going to invite all of you to take a tour up there and take a look at it and see what it is we're trying to preserve for our residents. Hiking, horseback riding, mountain biking, these are all things that will be done up there. And that's it's a considerable piece of property. And of course, it provides resource protection and water quality protection because of its openness. We have a number of partners. I won't read them all, but a lot of folks involved and interested in a lot of horseback riding organizations, mountain bikers, hikers, folks who are keenly interested in having this kind of resource made. While we've looked at it forever, now the opportunity to be able to get onto it. How can you help? Of course, contact down the lower left-hand corner is the Land Conservancy's website. There's an online donation possibility. We're looking for letters, and we would actually ask you all to consider a letter of support that goes to these large state agencies that have to make this level of commitment, so we'd appreciate that. And then there'll be various public meetings and stuff, opportunities to support the project. So with that, I'll close and see if you all have any questions for myself or Stacy. And again, thank you very much for this great opportunity to come here tonight. So.
Well, we thank you for taking time to provide the information for us. A quick question, I'm sure you probably have, but have you contacted our legislators, Cacho and Bill Monty?
Pretty broad group of people, including, Assemblyman Sajjan has been contacted and others, yes.
Okay. Questions?
I have one question.
Yes.
So when do you expect to have it open for people to use if you get the money and get it all together?
That's a question that we're always a little nervous about. I think that the answer is about a year.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'll let Stacy. Yeah. Okay. She knows more than I do. I'm just the good-looking guy. So.
Thank you. My name is Stacy. I'm the Conservation Project Manager at the Land Conservancy. And the unique opportunity with the Pisma Preserve is that there is existing road infrastructure there that we can already jump into. So the park would be open as soon as summer of 2015. So it's ready to go. We just need to get the funds to purchase it. The seller is eager to get rid of the property. And so if we can't find the funds, he's looking elsewhere, and he wants them by the end of this year. So we got to get the funds by July to close by August. Thank you.
I did have a quick question about if the project actually does become viable, then what about maintenance? What about monitoring? Those kinds of issues.
Yeah, there's. We would be hiring a part-time position that stewards the property. The property would be open from dawn to dusk, and that person would be out there patrolling the property boundary so that trespass wasn't an issue and trash isn't an issue. They would open the park and close the park, and there would be a parking lot off of Maddie Road where there's an existing cattle guard, and that's the delay.
Okay, we're going to move on to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on items that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any action on matters not on the agenda. We would ask that you keep your comments brief, 3 minutes or less, and please address the council as one body. Anyone who would like to come forward, once again, items not on this evening's agenda, with any comments, observations, suggestions, recommendations. Anyone? Okay, no takers. We will close community comments and suggestions, and we will move on to the consent agenda. If you're following along, we're going to be discussing consent items 8A through 8J. And once again, this is normally a group of items that the council approves in one motion, unless there is an item on the consent agenda that a member of the council would like to pull for further discussion, clarification, or an independent vote. This is also an opportunity for members of the public, once again, to come forward and comment on any of the items on consent. So once again, I'd like to make that offer. If there's anyone in the audience who would like to comment on consent items 8A through 8J, this would be your opportunity. Anyone? All right, seeing no one, we'll close public comment on the consent agenda. And what is the will of the council this evening? I know, Councilmember Brown, you have one item to pull.
H.
And I have questions on that item, the one he's pulling.
Okay. All right, so 8H, did I understand that you had a question on that same item?
Yes.
Okay. Any other items? All right, I'll entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8J with the exception of 8H.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Anything to read in there tonight, Tim?
No, Mayor Farrar.
Okay, thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay, 8H. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Teresa,
Hopefully Steve had a chance to talk to you since I talked to him earlier today.
Yes.
Okay, so I have a number of questions, some of which I posed to him and some which I probably didn't. I don't mean to put you on the hot seat, but I might just do that. I don't mean to, but it might just happen. I want to go back to the last time we approved the housing element and we had the consultant here. I was really dismayed on her presentation. She seemed to be asking the staff more questions about certain issues versus answering them directly. And one of the issues that came up was language by the Planning Commission that we were basically being told that we had to adopt in the short run, even though we could come back a year later and clean it up. And yet now I see the staff report, and it clearly says unequivocally that there are no penalties for taking our time and getting it right unless we're applying for grants or monies that would, you know, be necessary to have the housing element already approved. So I was really dismayed to see this item come up again. And I have a couple questions, and one is, what has changed in terms of the dynamic when last time it was so urgent that we approve it last year, when it clearly was not absolutely necessary that we approve it right away? And secondly, if you could go into the scope of work that the consultant is supposed to do between last year and this year, because I'm having a hard time in my own mind justifying paying someone that kind of money when it doesn't look to me like there's going to be a whole lot of changes. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you know something I don't know. But it doesn't seem like, in terms of the actual scope of work, that it should cost as much as it's costing.
I'm certainly happy to kind of review what we're facing in as regards to the housing element update. When you saw the previous housing element before you this last year, that was the fourth cycle of the round of housing element updates that for our region. So we were trying to get that certified through HCD, through the state, prior to this fifth cycle beginning. And the implications for that were not penalties per se, but to get our housing element certified previously. As regards what we're looking forward to and this this fifth cycle element update, a lot of the same types of statutory requirements. However, they've been modified a bit by the state, and we really just have to go in back in and crunch all the numbers again. We'll have to kind of redo the analysis for low, very low, affordability categories of the housing needs assessment. That's primarily where the work is done. And we'll revisit topics such as one that was providing some challenge to us at the last housing element update regarding streamlining, removing obstacles to approving housing development. So, and that was what was causing some concern at the end of the last update, that it was we have essentially an administrative approval or a minor use permit approval for multifamily housing. You may recall that's what caused a little concern, because in our previous policies it was a conditional use permit requirement. So we will have an opportunity to really flesh some of those things out. For example, we had talked about design guidelines and standards and really, you know, setting up a set of expectations, if you will, for multifamily housing should we still want to pursue that through a minor use permit approval. So I had the same reaction, kind of, why is it costing so much to go through it? We did actually get the scope down a little bit from the submittal. This consultant has very good expertise. I think they look to staff to make sure that every housing element is unique to the jurisdiction, and so they have to look to staff to make sure that the policies that were being brought forward are specific to that jurisdiction.
But the consultant's there to talk about state law and state regulation, and quite honestly, she didn't do that good a job last time. She was still looking to staff for those answers. But anyway, I appreciate your presentation. I have a couple other questions. One is, what's the scope of what she's doing? And two, what's her hourly rate?
The scope is essentially taking our previous element, matching it to new expectations for statutory requirements. Again, that housing needs assessment is the bulk of that. We relook at vacant and underutilized land inventories and constraints. Constraints, again, those removing those obstacles, whether they're by policy or process, to affordable housing, transitional shelters, many different special housing needs types will have to be reviewed. Then providing that input to the public, providing that those workshops, opportunities for public review, and going back and forth, which took quite a bit of effort at the last round with HCD staff on responding to their comments, and that's also incorporated in this.
So have you determined how many hours total, or roughly how many that'll be?
Yes.
Exhibit B, I think.
It is, and I'm trying to find it. So, as with most consulting firms, the principal will have a very different billing rate than their senior associates and their associates. It ranges from 90 to 150 for this firm. A lot of the work is done by their associates and reviewed by the principal.
And if we were to do that in-house, what would the rate be?
Well, the rate is substantially cheaper, but the length of time and the implications and impacts to other portions of the work program and in planning would be severely impacted.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, I understand that we have other people that have questions, but I just want to be really clear that I cannot support this item, and I think council should take a serious look at this before they vote on it. I don't think it's something, I know it's a small dollar amount, but I think we really need to look at this in greater detail and really ask ourselves if this is the direction we should be going. I'm probably in the minority, but I think we owe it to the public to all take a serious look at this and look back at the prior process and ask ourselves if this is the correct direction. I clearly do not think it is.
Looked at. I suspect through this whole thing we will come out with background data that's not entirely different from the first cycle. Mm-hmm. I think that there are some things we need to examine in the housing element update, some of the issues brought forward at the end of the last one that we should take some time to consider. I did look through the hours allocated to each task, mm-hmm. And again, we did bring that down a bit, and we put in some optional tasks into the scope. It's somebody's eyeballs and expert. This is a specialized field. It just is highly specialized and technical, and we need somebody's eyeballs on all of the data, and it's just going to take those hours. They looked very reasonable to me, actually, on review. We will also be looking at this in conjunction with hitting the street with an RFP for a land use element update, and we do have an administrative draft of our circulation element that's sitting there ready to go. We need to marry all these up for our general plan update effort, and the timing of this is of some importance to keep this moving forward.
If I could add just one other thing, because I also asked the same kind of questions to Teresa, but keep in mind that the data that we're compiling is not data compared to last year when this was approved. the last element that was approved included data that was established at the beginning of the cycle. So, you know, so the data we're going to be getting now is being compared to data that's probably at least 5 years old. So.
Any other questions on this item?
One quick question. This just relates, I mean, like I say, this is our fourth cycle, but if I remember right, none of these cycles have been approved by the state, I'm going to say, in less than 2 years of submittal. Would we expect a quicker turnaround here? I mean, you're talking about the importance of the timing here. My impression is that we can be as fast as we want, but it's the state who's going to hold us up.
They anticipate a 60 to 90 day review period, and we bring it to you first and get your blessing, and then send it up to the state for their review prior to certification. That's sometimes when they send down questions, and we often have to make revisions. I think there's been some effort on the part of HCD to streamline this effort. There's actually a special provision to streamline. We don't really benefit from that, and we're going forward with expectation of standard review, but that's what we're hearing is a 60 to 90 review timeline.
Okay. And then the second question, was the consultant on from the beginning last time? If I remember correctly, she was. But.
I believe we did attempt to prepare the element in-house at first last time, and that did slow the effort up considerably.
And we brought her on later to.
That's correct.
Okay. So I have some comments, but I'll wait for the comments.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and start with comments on this item. If there are no more questions, then, and we'll start with Councilmember Costello.
Well, I'll start with one question. Do we have someone in-house right now that could do this in a timely fashion, get it done in the time frame we need, without disrupting other tasks?
Not without disrupting other tasks, no.
Well, I'm gonna support this tonight. Planning is a fairly complex field, and over the past several years, we've reduced staff and reduced staff and reduced staff. If we want to do this kind of job in-house, we're going to have the right number of people on hand to do it. We don't. We have to farm it out. So I'll support this tonight.
Okay, thanks. Councilmember Barnidge?
Echoing what Joe said, I mean, we have minimized the staff in the planning department. And I remember from looking at this at Planning Commission, it's a pretty big job, especially with all the state regulations and such. So. I think we have to move forward with this consultant. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Brown, any other comments?
Just that I think that it's not as complicated given that we've had the work already done. The scope of work has already been done a year ago, and to say that there's any significant change between last year and this year I think is not appropriate. There are some minor changes, and I don't think we're using city funds wisely. And I think city staff, as it was talked about, did do a lot of the stuff in-house last time. I know that if I have a greater workload, I understand that. But if we believe this is something of importance, then it should take priority. Whether it takes priority or not, we've already know that there's really no penalty for getting it done now or a few months from now. So,
unfortunately, have to have a specialist, if you will, in this. And so I'm going to support this tonight. For that reason, I did have some hesitation. I recognize that we've cut staff, but we do have someone who's dedicated to exclusively these kinds of things. And it did occur to me that it does seem like we should be able to do this in house. But I do recognize that not one of these has gone smoothly, and this one only went smoother when we brought in some special expertise. So I wanted to support this tonight because I do think it is part of getting, it's part of our responsibility. If there's no penalty, it is part of our responsibility to get this done.
Okay, thanks. Well, just so I can frame this correctly, Teresa, I understand that from year to year there's a certain amount of boilerplate from one housing element to the next, and I'm sure that this consultant, since we used her last year, will make use of that format. And And I think what is sort of troubling is the fact that we were so late in the cycle of last, you know, the last RENA cycle, that it seems like it's you know, 1 year to the next, but it's really not. What we were doing with that last presentation is essentially putting a housing element to bed after planning for, 362 new housing units in four or five different housing categories. So ideally, that should have occurred much earlier in the cycle. The fact that it occurred in the last year of the cycle, and now we're into a new year, I think, is what's troubling. But the reality of what's in front of us here in terms of the scope of work is that now we have to make room, from a planning perspective at least, for another 242 units. And that's going to be our next five-year cycle. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So hopefully next year we won't see another contract like this. We won't see another one until 2019. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And I just want to piggyback on just a statement that Mayor Pro Tem made. I think of all of the state agencies that I've had contact with, HCD has been one of the most difficult to work with. And they are armed, unfortunately, with a whole long list of state housing legislation that leaves local government with little option but to comply. That's on the negative side. On the positive side, I think it's important that we put this to bed as quickly as possible. Because, as you well know, there are a lot of legislators up there right now that are hopefully pulling to bring back some form of redevelopment, and I suspect that some of that legislation will be crafted to prioritize the monies being spent on housing. So that all isn't going to occur unless we have all of our proverbial ducks in a row. In other words, we have our unapproval from HCD for our housing element. And then, of course, there's also the interaction between the other elements of the general plan. So all of those things are a priority. It is kind of an art form to try and work with HCD and the extent, and I, you know, for one, would not welcome that on our staff. So I understand some of the frustrations that Councilmember Brown has, but at the same time, I'm relatively comfortable with the scope of work. I would ask, though, that that we closely monitor, especially Exhibit B, in the staff report. Some of those line items there might be a little excessive, and there may be some excess in there that we can trim. So the extent to which that would affect whatever action we take tonight, I don't know. But if we approve this contract with some amended language that would require staff to do some close monitoring of the work of that consultant to make sure that everything is on the up and up. And I'm sure you're going to do that anyway. But with all of that, I can move forward with this as well. So I'll entertain a motion.
Move adoption.
Is that it?
I guess so.
Okay.
It is. So I'll just give a little introduction and turn it over to Judith. As far as background, in May of last year, the City Council adopted an ordinance which established the Aurora Grandy Tourism Business Improvement District, which established a 1% assessment on all lodging charges to go towards tourism efforts to help attract more hotel stays in the city. The city contracts with the Chamber of Commerce to administer the TBID, and the City Council appointed a TBID advisory board, which consists of three hoteliers. A lot of progress has been made over the past year on these tourism efforts. Staff believes that it's a worthwhile program and should be continued. According to state law, in order to continue the TBID another year, each year the City Council needs to approve an annual report, schedule a public hearing, provide an opportunity again for any impacted businesses, basic lodging businesses, to file protest, and then to pass a resolution to continue the TBID another year if a majority of protests are not received. Judith Bean is here from the chamber this evening to present the annual report, and which has already been approved by the TBID Advisory Board. After she makes her presentation, staff then recommends that the City Council approve the annual report, schedule the public hearing for the June 10th meeting, and then also adopt a resolution of intention to continue the TBID another year. That, Judith?
Okay. Mayor and members of the Council, I'm Judith Bean. I'm the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce. And just to give you some background, our TBID was formed last July, and we've done a tremendous amount since then. We do have a three-member board, Andrew Janess, Mike Panchal, and Kevin Thornton. And we also have an advisory committee. Council Member Barney sits on that committee. And that is made up of all of the, basically, the tourism members in our community, the Clark Center, Tally Vineyards, and Mustang Water Slides and some hoteliers. So they get together, they hash out ideas, and then they forward those to the board for consideration. So yes, the chamber oversees the administration. We coordinate the meetings. We manage the contractors. We develop the marketing plan. We respond to requests. We hired Barnett Cox and Associates for the creative. They did the website, and they do the ads that we'll be able to see a little bit of later. These are some of the activities we did in 2013. Our Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest are very active. The chamber and committee members provide the content for that. We did a number of different projects that are outlined in this that I won't read to you because that'll just bore you to tears. So our goals for next year is to increase signage on the 101 corridor. There is a billboard on private property here on the south end of town that is actually a village association billboard, and we're looking at providing new creative for that, not changing the size of the sign, but providing some new creative for it because it's been the same for a few years. We're also looking at possibly doing a billboard maybe 40 to 60 miles away from Rio Grande, so as people are driving up the 101 corridor, they'll think about us and maybe stop and check us out. We've had some discussions about doing a wrap of one of the RTA buses. We are definitely going to take advantage of marketing strategies and creative campaigns. We actually have, some of you know, we're planning on shooting a video in the next few weeks here in Arroyo Grande, and that's part of an effort through Visit California, who is looking for content from local TBIDs, and then they'll use their considerable muscle if we send them something good to market it worldwide. So we're pretty excited about that. Of course, we'll continue to participate in the Savor the Central Coast event. We found that that was very useful to us last year. We did have a booth and a farm-to-school garden last year at the Savor event, and that garden ended up at Harlow Elementary after the program. And then we will work with destination marketing organizations like the Central Coast Tourism Council, the Visit SLO County, and Visit California. This is just a screenshot of visitgrande.org. That's our website, and it has been active now for, I think we got it up about 3 months after the TBID was activated, and it continues to do really well. We have a sponsorship page with TripAdvisor. This is a year contract. TripAdvisor and, Councilman Guthrie would be able to tell you that TripAdvisor and all of those websites that book hotels, booking.com, those are the place to be if you really want to get some exposure. We have display ads on TripAdvisor.com. This is just C. So that's basically all she wrote. So we've done a lot, and we've got a good committee and a lot of excitement on it, so I think it's going really well. And do you have any questions for me?
Questions?
No. Judith, what kind of results are we seeing in terms of increased numbers? And I know that may be hard to quantify, but what's your feeling?
With the hotels? All hotels are doing a lot better, it seems, this year, since we've kind of weathered the storm. But we do seem to see some direct results with people staying in the hotels. We get most of our information comes from the bigger properties like Hampton Inn, and they're seeing some direct results from our advertising efforts. And we have built up our online presence, so I think, once people find out about Arroyo Grande, they want to come check us out.
TOT revenues are currently up. Now, it's hard to determine exactly, how much of that is attributed to this, but TOT revenues are doing well.
Do we have any direct feedback built in, postcards, contact points?
Yeah, we're in the process of collecting emails to build our email database, and there's, of course, through social media, that's always, we try and answer everything the minute it gets posted, so there is a good give and take on that, yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Judith, it's 2%, correct? I think.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I apologize.
You.
I was just Tim just mentioned that to me. I want to correct that.
Yes, it's 2%. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I did a couple of questions. One, I'm on the traffic. What kind of traffic are you seeing at your website? I know it's new, but.
Golly, that's a good question, and I don't know the exact numbers for that, I'm afraid, but we have seen steady growth throughout this last year on it. It started out pretty slow, but now that it started to move, if you're doing searchability on Arroyo Grande, the TBID shows up first.
And do you have the ability to track when people come through your site and
yes.
Squat through? You don't know whether they book necessarily, but you don't.
Yeah, but we can track who's going through, yeah.
And
yeah, we
where,
do have.
Where they're leaving your site in it.
Mm-hmm.
Your site and going to. Okay.
Because
I think those are the kinds of numbers that I know I would be interested in.
Yeah, yeah.
The other question I had related to budget. I kind of thought we would see the budget and how the money was spent, but I'm going to wonder, did you spend the entire $164,000?
I think we're not going to spend the entire $164,000 this year. There were a couple of things that we had budgeted that we didn't end up doing, so we sort of ran out of time before we ran out of money, which I think is probably a good thing. But we plan on spending that money next year.
A lot of people actually that are having trouble, are running out of time.
Yeah.
And the final question I had, and this was something that the mayor mentioned quite some time ago, and that you were talking about billboards. I know there was potentially some sort of an opportunity with Caltrans to use the median, I'm going to say, as a billboard on both ends of town. Have you guys investigated that at all?
We looked into it a little. Mainly the committee and the TBID board were thinking that we really wanted to look at doing something big, a little further out, yeah.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. This is not a public hearing, but if there's anyone in the audience who would like to comment on this item, you're welcome to do so. Any takers? Okay. Seeing no one from the audience, we'll bring this to the council, and we'll start on my left with Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. No, I'm ready to move forward with this tonight. I think that I've been to the meetings with Judith and the committee, and there's a lot of good discussion that comes on and a lot of good ideas, and I feel like the board is moving forward and really excited, and we have talked at the meetings that business is up. We don't know if that's because we're sort of out of the recession. But when you look at the website that Judith put together and Barnett and Cox put together, it's really, really high-class, nice-looking. So I'm ready to move forward tonight, and I'm ready to move forward and be interested to see if some people show up for the public hearing, the hotel owners, and see what they have to say as well. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Brown.
I am excited about this because I think it's an example of public-private partnership, which I'm a big fan of and we don't see enough of. So I'm looking forward to seeing this go forward. I would say I think the questions that you've gotten today, Judith, have to do with what's measurable. So my hope is that as time goes on, we can tell these people that are contributing to this and a part of this that it's money well spent, and it's just not pie in the sky. Anecdotally, I think we can say that it's successful. I would like to be able to say measurably that it's successful so they have more comfort level going forward that this has been something that was the right thing to do. So, yes, absolutely, I'm ready to move forward, and I look forward to see what comes out of it.
Okay, very good. Councilmember Costello.
I, too, am ready to...
On page four.
On page four. I move approval of a resolution of the City Council of Arroyo Grande declaring its intention to continue the Arroyo Grande Tourism Business Improvement District, to continue the basis for and to levy the assessment for the district, and to set a date for the public hearing on the district and the assessment for fiscal year 2014-15.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call. We'll do the separate motion on the report. Councilmember Brown.
Councilmember Barnidge.
Yes.
Councilmember Brown.
Yes.
Councilmember Costello.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie.
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar.
Yes. Okay, we need a motion to approve the annual report.
So moved.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion on this? Hearing none. All in, no. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Absolutely.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. Thanks, Judith. Okay, we're going to move on to item 11B. This is consideration of a certification of the five-year radar speed survey for selected city streets. And good evening, Chief. Good evening, Mike.
Good evening. We're here this evening asking you to adopt a resolution certifying an update of our five-year radar speed survey for selected streets. But before I get into the methodology of that, I would like to tell you the assumptions that we're using for the vehicle speed survey. This is essentially a joint partnership between the police department and the engineering department. The assumptions are that, I'll blatantly read from the PowerPoint slide, laws cannot be effectively enforced without the consent and voluntary compliance of the public. B, laws are established for the protection of the public and the regulation of the unreasonable behavior of a few individuals. And the normally careful and competent actions of a reasonable person should be considered legal. And that most drivers are reasonable people who will drive carefully at a speed which is suitable for existing conditions. And I think the first three, I think everyone will agree with. Fourth is a little bit of interpretation, but generally that what law is all about, the reasonable man. So essentially, we try to set a realistic speed limit, and the problems that you have if you set something unrealistically is if you make it too low, you can make the behavior of the majority unlawful, because most people are going faster where they feel comfortable. And if enforced, it can cause antagonism toward enforcement personnel and traffic laws in general, create a bad image of the community for visitors and tourists, and result in speed differentials in the traffic flow. So with that, I'll go into the actual engineering and traffic speed survey. This is actually a national standard, and California has a modification to it per our municipal uniform traffic control devices, a supplement. But the California Vehicle Code Section 627 spells out what is involved in an engineering and traffic survey. And the requirements, the prevailing speeds as determined by traffic engineering measurements. There's specific criteria that we have to follow in order to collect the data. It's also based on accident records, which is kept up by the police department, and highway traffic and roadside conditions not readily apparent to the driver. So there is a little bit of engineering judgment that we can do to determine if the road has some elements that either should be corrected or cannot be corrected. It's basically spelled out by the 2012 MUTCD California Supplement. The Municipal Uniform Traffic Control Device is that acronym. That's a national publication. California, like most states, has their own take on the situation. They go through and they made a supplement, which is in Chapter 8, which spells out all the criteria that you have to do to perform a survey. It's also regulated by California Vehicle Code 22348 through 22413, which I won't go into detail, but that's all the specifics that has to do with how you comply with the speed survey. And we took that on to perform the survey. So we found 37 separate roadway segments between December 2013 through March 2014. We actually had an intern that went out with a radar speed survey gun. And I'll get into that in a minute. And what we found out was that the survey actually verified the current posted speed limit for the majority of the streets in town. There hadn't been a lot of changes. Before I get into that, I'll just go in really briefly as to how we perform the survey. And that is, there's a certain sampling requirement that you have to collect the data. You have to have an unmarked car. The whole theory is that you want people to drive where they do not feel encumbered in any way. So it's where they would drive in a comfortable, a Royal Grande setting, where the weather is perfect, there's no traffic encumbrances, traffic jams, anything of that nature, where they actually feel comfortable with the topography of the road and how they drive. So with the survey, we have predetermined locations. It can't be too close to an intersection where people slow down. It has to be a reasonable spot. They take a sampling of 100 vehicles in each direction, and we graphically measure and produce a presentation as to where the majority of the vehicles are driving. The sweet spot, or the spot that it's all based on, is the 85th percentile, which means 85 cars or 84 cars are going slower, 15 are going faster. And this is pointed out by the national survey, the national study that, based on their research through the years, is where people feel most comfortable. And there's other considerations that go into it. There's a certain vehicle's pacing that happens. There's a 10-mile-an-hour pace limit, they call it, that's usually fairly close to that. But you have a little bit of leeway, but we'll get into that a little bit later. But the 2014 speed survey, what we found, again, most of the streets complied, but we actually had six segments that actually will have a 5 mile per hour reduction. And they're shown here. South Halcyon Road, Oak Park Boulevard, West Branch Street, South Elm. It's all in the report. So that's the good news. There was three roads, actually there was more than three roads, but I'll just give them that in a minute. Three roads that are recommended for 5 mile per hour increase. Two of these were on El Camino, the 400 block eastbound and the 800 block westbound. And we believe this is a result of us recently completing the overlay project. The speed's crept up a little bit. The other part is Fair Oaks Avenue, the 400 block, which unfortunately is right in front of the high school. And we do have some criteria that we can use. One is the accident history. We looked at the accident history, and amazingly enough, I believe there have only been three accidents in 3 years. It actually was surprising. We looked at all the other criteria that are available by the California Vehicle Code, and we could not come up with a justification. So we are recommending that Fair Oaks actually increases in speed by 5 miles per hour. Now there were, I believe there's five streets, and I have a summary of them here, of where we actually were able to justify reducing the speed limit. And one of these was East Cherry Avenue, the 200 block, which is going eastbound just before you hit Branch Mill Road. Current posted speed limit is 35 miles per hour. By a radar speed survey, you can see that it actually should stay at 35 miles an hour. But there are certain elements of the California Vehicle Code, and it states here, section 22352, that states that the roadway is actually less than 40 feet in width,
it can be classified as a residential roadway, and that it automatically can be adjusted down to the prima facie speed of 25 miles per hour. Next is Farrell Avenue, 1200 block westbound. I believe this is right near Elm Street and Oak Park in that region. The current posted speed limit is 35 miles per hour, but the 85th percentile ended up at 37.57, which means it has to be rounded up to the next 5 mile per hour increment, which is 40 miles per hour. But again, there's an exemption that's in the California Vehicle Code that says if there's senior facilities nearby, of which there are two, that as long as it's properly signed with a senior warning signed in each direction, which we will have to install, we can actually reduce it to the prima facie speed of 25 miles per hour. So that is also in our recommendations. East Grant Street, 500 block. This is actually between Mason and the top of the hill going out to WASDA. The current speed limit is 30 miles per hour, but by our calculations, the 85th percentile, it should go up to 35 miles per hour. We did an engineering justification on this. If we sign it properly, we can actually legally bring the speed limit down to 30 miles per hour. And each of these, I should mention, I actually write up a document, and I have an engineering stamp that I stamp it with and sign off that in my engineering judgment, this is the direction we should proceed, and we keep that within the file. The other one was West Branch Street. This is the 800 block. This is actually right in front of the library and the South County Regional Center. The current speed limit is 40 miles per hour. The rest of the roadway ended up being 40 miles per hour all the way back to Vernon Street. But by that 42.9, we're supposed to round up to the next 40, to the next 5 mile per hour increment, which would be 45 miles per hour. We had a problem with this because of the roadway curvature right as it approaches when you're going westbound and you're approaching the library driveway, and the sight line of an individual trying to exit the driveway looking east. And I have a graphic on that also. You can barely see it, but table 201.1 is the sight distance standards that are in the Caltrans Highway Design Manual. And for 40 miles per hour, you have 300 feet that's recognized as what someone would have to recognize the vehicle that's approaching and be able to put on the stop pedal and stop in time. 300 feet. The first concentric line that you see is the current speed limit, the sight distance is required, that represents a vehicle. You can see that a vehicle trying to exit the driveway looking to the east, there's a tree right here, and I'll show you a picture in a second, that does obscure the vision. It is actually tough to even justify the 40 mile per hour limit. But if you put it to 45 miles per hour, which is an additional 60 feet, it is obscured by the embankment between the parking lot and the roadway. And that's actually what we see here. I usually put a delineator or something out there in order to delineate where that 360 feet is at, but you get the general idea. It is very difficult to pick up traffic. So with that, we justified bringing the speed limit down again another 5 miles per hour. So that essentially completes my presentation. We do have the police chief here to answer any questions, and I'd be happy to answer them as well.
Questions for Mike?
I do.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mike, or maybe for the chief, in the staff report, and you just went over it, the two, East Cherry Avenue and Farrell Avenue, where we're reduced, even though the 85th percentile was about where the speed limits were, 36 and 37 miles per hour, but we're reducing it down to 25, and I understand the justification. Is there going to be any sort of wiggle room when those speed limits are adjusted? Because I know if someone travels that street every day, you sort of know what the speed limit is, and all of a sudden it's 25, it's 10 miles less. You know, are we going to start pulling people over for speeding the day the speed limit signs go up, or how's that work?
Usually, actually in all cases, when we do traffic enforcement in general, we usually look at a 5 to 7 mile per hour leeway for people before we actually make the stop or look to do any enforcement, with the exception if there's any safety issues, obviously, with pedestrians or anything else. In this case, when you're changing the speed limit, obviously, when we first get out there, what we'll do is utilize warnings as best we can to get people to slow down. But they would already have to be going 5 to 7 miles over the speed limit before we would even probably engage them, unless, again, there's pedestrians or other safety issues.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, on the ones where we're reducing it 5 miles an hour, I don't see that as a big deal, but 10 is a pretty big jump. So I had a question on that. Thank you for answering that. I appreciate it. That's it.
I do. I guess I have a couple questions. One is, if we have trouble with one of the segments that you've talked about, and I'm particularly thinking about the high school, can we certify the report with some sort of caveat? Because I understand that you're telling me that 3 accidents in 3 years is pretty good, but I hate to remember my teenage years and what a dreadful driver I was at that time. And I'm concerned that if we raise the speed limit, they're going to go 5 or 10 miles an hour faster, and then we're going to find out 3 years from now that our accident rate went from 3 in the last 3 years to maybe 4, maybe 5. It just takes one bad one. Is there any reason in that particular segment we can't err on the side of caution?
All the justifications that I come up with are subject to review by the traffic commissioner when someone gets a ticket. So we don't know if it will really fly. Everything appears to be in conjunction with the California Vehicle Code. That particular stretch, except as the police chief mentioned, the 25 mile per hour when children are present, we have nothing in the California Vehicle Code that we can point to support our position. There's no sideline problems. It's just subjective opinion, unfortunately.
Well, I think he answered my question, and I just didn't think about it, but okay.
I have one quick question also. I understand why we're doing this. It's a 5-year cycle for all streets and roads. Where is Halcyon and the Pike in that 5-year cycle? I know we've been talking about that lately. Are we looking at that next year, the year after? When was the last speed survey done out there?
It must still be current. I'd have to check on that to get back to you. It's probably got a couple years left.
Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem?
Yeah, my question actually related directly to the traffic court. Can we get a pre-opinion? I mean, he seems to have us on his radar.
We've tried to do that before, and I don't know how it is in other places, but the incumbent Commissioner Sefton, is that his name? He has not allowed that to happen. We tried that a couple of years ago when we went through the same exercise. He'll wait until someone actually comes with a ticket and is presented in court, and he will do nothing before that time.
I just want to see if we can. Thank you.
If I can add one little piece to that, what he normally looks for is what we have before you right now, and that is updated current engineering study certifying the speeds. When you don't have that, obviously, then that's a problem. And in the case of the ones that we have a slight concern about, like the high school, again, that's actually not changing, and that's part of the vehicle code as far as where children are present going to 25 miles per hour. So from what we see, we're quite comfortable that we should be in pretty good stead.
Okay. I think specifically of the one on Cherry is very similar to Tally Ho, and the 10 seems to me that would be one worth trying to run by him if we could. But we'll wait for a ticket.
Yeah, well, just speaking of Tally Ho real quick, it was classified as one part of the vehicle code as being residential because of the number of structures and driveways that were within a quarter mile, but what he was looking at was another section that said a residential road has to be less than 40 feet, and it actually, I believe, is 42, and that's why that did not pass. Right.
I have a couple of questions. Mike, can you bring the slide up of West Branch, the one in front of the regional center? Right. And you mentioned the site constraints there?
Correct.
And you also said, if I understood you correctly, that that you're recommending 40, but you potentially could justify something lower. Did I understand you to say that?
I would have to actually go up. What we've done in the past is we actually set a delineator that's about 3.5 feet high to represent a bumper of a car and actually put out in the middle of the road. When I did this analysis, I was by myself, didn't have anybody helping me, so it was kind of difficult.
Well, let me ask you this. Can you take another look at that?
Sure.
And I guess what I'm asking is see if we can make a case for 35. Were you able to?
Yes, actually, before I go out there and measure again, I believe everything is current with the way it is now. The 300 feet is, you can see it. But I will go out and look at it again. We'll do an analysis.
All right. If there's a way of legitimately justifying 35 miles an hour, it might help us a little bit with Caltrans and looking at our Briscoe alternatives. It's not actually crucial because I think the mitigation that will go in with the project will require a 35 mile an hour speed limit. But if there is one that exists out there now, that would help. So,
okay.
If you can take another look at that, and then Chief, I did want to ask you. If there's been any follow-up on, I think the big controversy the last time we did speed surveys was Tally-Ho. We increased that speed limit out there, but we also put some signage up. So what's been the impact of that?
Well, for us, Tally-Ho's been kind of a success story.
How does that work?
I would say we could either eliminate it from the resolution, or we can and revisit another time, or we could just pass the resolution and then do a follow-up to it if something changes.
Yeah, I would
that would probably be most convenient.
Okay. Okay, no other questions. We have no members of the public left in the audience, so we'll bring this to the council. We'll start with Councilmember Costello.
Well, I see this as an enforcement tool and a necessary enforcement tool that we have to have for our police department to do any enforcement of the traffic speed limits. So I will support this tonight. I think the times you've said that we want to reduce the speed 5 miles per hour in the specific locations are reasonable and defensible, so I'll support this tonight.
Okay. Thanks. Councilmember Brown?
I will too, Mike. I appreciate your work very much. And also the chief, I remember when we had a lot of people out in the audience that were concerned, and you came up with a plan that I think took care of that angst that was going on there, and that gave a comfort level to the neighborhood. So I appreciate your doing that extra work because it really has an effect on the neighborhood. So thank you for that.
Okay, very good. Councilmember Barnage.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm ready to move forward as well. I appreciate Mike's PowerPoint presentation. It was very thorough, and the diagrams and the justifications for the raising and the lowering of the speed limits seem right on, so I'm ready to move forward. Thank you.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I'm prepared to support it as well.
All right, I'll make it unanimous again with the understanding that we're going to do a follow-up on West Branch. And with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd move a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande certifying the 5-year speed survey for selected city streets.
All right, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Councilmember Barnage. And roll call, please. Any discussion? None. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Brown?
Absolutely.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Item 12 is council communications. Any announcements, clarifications, requests?
Went to the Paulding Wall fundraiser, and my son and I had a fantastic time. And I I can't say enough for the Five Cities Men Club for putting that on and kick-starting that fundraising.
Yeah, and I would add to that, and I want to thank our city manager and also our city attorney for donating to the cause. And I think everybody that was there had a wonderful time. It was the Five Cities Men Club hit it out of the park on this one. It was really a good show. Any other comments? Yes.
I have one. I took a tour to our water treatment plant a couple days ago with Shane from Public Works, and I learned a lot, but I was amazed how much Shane knew. Obviously, he knows a lot. He's been with the city forever. But he's a really sweet guy, and he took me out there. Don't laugh. He is, in a Shane sort of way. And we took a tour, and so anyway, I appreciated that. And he's a really good guy working for the city. Mm-hmm. That's all I wanted to say.
it's on tape now, Kristen.
Until he takes you to the sewer.
Actually, Shane takes our America and Bloom judges out there every year.
Yeah.
And you're right, he knows that plant backwards and forwards, and he's a good guy, very knowledgeable.
Yes.
Any other council communication? Okay, staff communication, anything, Steve?
Just a reminder that we have AmGem tour coming through on Thursday, and it should be coming right through the village somewhere between noon and 12:15, so we're really trying to get the word out. It's a great time for folks to come down and have lunch in the village and shop in the village businesses and get to watch world-class racing at the same time. There will be a sprint again right in the village, so it'll be good to be exciting time.
I forgot. Are they letting the high school out, or how's that working? I forgot.
I need to check back with them. We've had some discussions. We're hoping they won't be able to release the students at lunch, so the hope is that they'll have some special activities out in the parking lot for the students so they can come out and watch the race, because once it goes through the village, it goes by Fair Oaks and Valley, so they'll be going right by the high school during their lunch hour, too.
Yeah, I'm hoping that maybe we can put the word out, tell your friends and neighbors, and for those who are watching on TV, if you can get away over the lunch hour, it'd be nice to come down to the village and watch this bicycle race. It's very short in duration, but very exciting.